Hi everyone, Colin here. Before we begin today's podcast, I wanted to be sure to remind you about an exciting thing coming up if you live in the Chicago area. Saturday, August 11th is BP night at Guaranty Great Field. Prior to that night's game against the Cleveland Indians, there will be a private meet and greet with special guests for Baseball Prospectus and elsewhere, including our very own Nick Schaefer and our old friend from The Athletic, James Fegan. Other BP folks in attendance include Harry Pavlidis, Jonathan Judge, and Brett Sayer. I unfortunately will not be in attendance as I will be stuck here in the scorching Texas heat, but maybe that's a bonus, and all the more reason you'll want to go. The event also includes a Q&A with White Sox GM Rick Hahn, members of the White Sox front office, and admission includes a $15 off coupon to a Baseball Prospectus premium or super premium subscription. That night is also Jim Tomey bobblehead night. You're going to want to be there regardless of if you want to meet Nick, James, and maybe ask a question to Rick Hahn. If you haven't yet, please visit baseballperspectives.com and click on the events tab at the top of the page. That's where you can get your ticket to the event, which of course includes admission to that night's game between the White Sox and the Indians. Anyway, hope you go. It should be a good time. BP events always are. And enjoy today's podcast.
Welcome to The Catbird Speaks, the podcast for BP Southside, Baseball Prospectus' local site, covering the Chicago White Sox. I'm Colin Whitchurch, co-editor-in-chief of BP Southside, joined today from the city of Sin, Mark Primiano, Dr. 100. What's up, Mark?
Not much. How are you doing, man?
Good. And from somewhere in New York, Manhattan, Brooklyn, I don't really know. Yes. It's Frank Furkey. What's up, Frank?
Not much. Excited to talk White Sox.
Yes. You know,
this extremely successful team that we follow and occasionally write about.
It's been a while since I've been able to podcast, and I think the same for the two of you. I know Nick talked to BP lead prospect writer Jeff Paternostro the other weekend. We're recording on Thursday evening, August 2nd. And as of this minute, the White Sox still have not called up Eloy Jimenez. I don't know. We're doing like a minute-by-minute watch at this point. You know, maybe it's never going to happen. We're just going to do this all the way until the end of September. Mark, you wrote an article on BPSouthside.com today about why Eloy Jimenez should be in the majors. It's an article that any sane human being should agree with. So, yeah, why don't you just go through, kind of what you were talking about today about the reasons why he should so obviously be in the majors.
Oh, it's just one of those things where I understand why they can't just come out right and say, yeah, we're keeping him down there for money reasons. Because, I mean, everybody with more of a working knowledge than just, oh, I like watching baseball, understands, yeah, that's exactly why he's still down there. And they can't say it, because if you do that, then you're just straight up admitting to your fans, hey, we don't really care anymore.
Yeah. But
I think more saliently, you're also going to lose Grievance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's the real reason they can't admit it. I think they're less worried about what the fans think than getting slapped to the union Grievance that'll overturn whatever they were trying to get out of service time manipulation.
But yeah, it's just one of those things where it's so frustrating that they're trying all this service time gaming, because yes, it's the thing you do now, but there's a new collective bargaining agreement happening between now and that potential extra year of control. What's to say that extra year of control is even going to still be there?
Yeah, and I think what's more frustrating, like, I don't know, maybe it's bad, but I've kind of resigned myself to the fact that teams are going to do this. They're going to game the rules, whatever. What drives me nuts is that somehow, and you touched on this really well in your article, somehow they've almost, I don't know if it's too extreme to say, brainwashed fans into thinking this is the right thing to do. We've seen a lot of that, you know, and to be fair, a good majority of White Sox fans I talk to or I hear from on Twitter are like us, and they know that, you know, this isn't necessarily the right thing to do, even if it's a technically legal thing to do in baseball. But there's a vocal minority of people who care about things like Jerry Reinsdorf saving an extra X amount of $1 million in 2025. And that just is something that I cannot possibly fathom.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely baffling, because every team makes money. Every team makes money. And I don't understand how you can argue, oh, well, we'll be so much better set up because we'll have this extra year of team control. Penals has brought up a fantastic point on Twitter recently where that extra year of team control is not going to be cheap. If he gets that extra year, he's going to be making about $20 million that year. That's not really a deal.
No.
Like, yeah, he can't go anywhere because he's still your player, but you're not saving money. That $20 million would be...
I mean, it's a deal if he turns into, like, Giancarlo Stanton, I suppose. Any
player would ever made in a season.
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing if you're actually using those savings to improve the team by spending money elsewhere, but this is a White Sox team, like I said today in the article, that had Chris Sale, Jose Quintana, Adam Eaton. I didn't mention Abreu, but he definitely falls in the same category. Four great players that any team would look at and go, yeah, we could use you on dirt cheap contracts, and did nothing to build the team around them. And this is a team that still has only the highest contract is Jose Abreu's. We've never spent $100 million on a single player.
Part of this is frustration just from a fan standpoint because it's August 2nd. The White Sox are 32 games under 500 after today's win against the Royals. And, you know, watching the team on a day-to-day basis gets exhausting. It gets mind-numbing. And we want to see exciting things these last 2 months. We want reasons to tune in and watch this team on a night-to-night basis. But the thing that is often not talked about, and which you mentioned again in your article, is you run the risk of pissing off the player. Maybe you gain that extra year of control, but then when he hits free agency, maybe he remembers how you, I don't want to say negotiated in bad faith, but how you were saving money at the expense of him making money. And that shit just don't sit well.
Yeah, it kind of feels like it. I remember why the Sox had avoided arbitration for so long with so many players, because there was the Keith Foulke arbitration battle where he left that with very bad feelings towards the team because he was just like, wow, you guys said some stuff I did not expect to hear today. Because, yeah, if you go into battles like this, you're essentially looking at the player and going, no, you are worth exactly this much. And I don't know many people in any line of work who, when they get into an argument like that with their bosses and their higher-ups, that walk away feeling good about it.
Yeah, and go ahead, Frank. I thought you were, I thought you started talking. Nope. My bad. And I mean, I think there's a certain point, you know, getting into the arbitration thing where people get used to it, or certain guys take it much more personally than others. I think there have been some quotes out there, you know, the Yankees, if I'm not mistaken, have been notorious about battles with, like, Dellin Betances in the past. And it's always a bad look, but I think that, you know, it's something that I think a lot of people just come to accept. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But, you know, just getting back to Jimenez specifically, the fact that he's hitting better in Charlotte than he has at pretty much any other stop is absurd. The fact that he's practically not striking out at all. He has 12 strikeouts in
the 8 walks, yeah.
And 110 plate appearances, I guess, at this point. You just want to see him. You want to see him against major league hitters because it gets you more ready and more excited for 2019. It gets him experience, et cetera, all that stuff. And also it's something to care about the last 2 months of the season. And it makes the player feel good and that he's being rewarded for completely annihilating the league.
Right. And the White Sox have been certainly above average. They're probably not the like top of the league. And to their benefit in signing guys to comparatively early long-term deals, that, you know, they did that with Eden and Abreu and Quintana, or sorry, Eden and Sale and Quintana. And the fact they were able to do that is why they have most of this, you know, most of the guys they have now. And you know, that all of those guys, they gave, you know, more rope than they absolutely needed to. And, you know, that's the sort of thing that shows up in the negotiations. And I don't know who he was LA's agent is. I can't actually find it quickly. But, you know, so I don't know if he's – I don't think he's a Boris guy or whatever. So, you know, not only are you – not only is it not a terribly ethical thing to do in terms of how you should be treating your players, but also it helps it, to the extent that it's beneficial for everybody to sign an extension. This gets in the way of doing that.
To play devil's advocate just for a second, you know, the joke the last week or so has been about the whole checking of the boxes, and I think it was Kenny Williams or someone who mentioned him needing to make some defensive improvements, and everyone has said all along that that's probably his biggest weakness is defense, and he's probably going to end up at first base at some point in his career. Is there... You know, we're not in Major League front office. We're not Major League scouts, et cetera, et cetera. Is there a possibility that there's actually something there where this is a baseball reason, or do you guys just completely disregard that entirely?
It's like you said, we're not baseball professionals. We're people that care about this more than the average fan and have spent more time thinking about stuff like this. So obviously, yeah, our opinions aren't going to be perfect, but... If your entire argument, I mean, and the only argument they've really presented is defense, we're talking about a corner outfielder. We're not talking about a catcher working on framing and game calling or a shortstop or a second baseman working on positioning. We are talking about two of the easier positions to play where I can't honestly imagine playing right or left field in AAA is going to be any different than playing it in the majors.
Yeah, I mean, he's not, right, so the whatever his defense is not going to be, he's not going to be a boat anchor because it's very difficult to do that in left or in right. And, you know, so the questions regarding how good Eloy is going to be are how well is he going to hit in the bigs and... You know, how well is he going to field in the bigs? Because that's how it is for everybody. And, you know, the fielding, there's not a ton of variation, and I don't think you're going to find out anything, nor, you know, in AAA, you wouldn't find out in the bigs. And he's clobbered every level of minor league pitching. And so, you know, we're at the point where we're mostly interested in figuring out what the outcome is and not whether he's going to be good, because how can you say he's going to learn? I mean, not to say he won't learn anything, but... you know, there's not a ton of doubt as to how well he's going to do at AAA.
It's kind of funny too, because we've seen in the past with, they got into this a little bit with Moncada year and a half ago, where I think that was the first time I heard kind of the analogy about checking the boxes. I don't think it was actually from the White Sox front office, but it was just from, you know, from hearing what scouts are saying around the league, et cetera. And it's funny that is the reason that they could supposedly give for players like Eloy when with pitching prospects over the last couple of years, whether, you know, you could say even going back to Sale, but with Rodon and most recently with guys like Fulmer and Giolito and Lopez, they came up and it was almost kind of readily admitted that maybe they're not finished products, but this is where they're going to be able to complete their development. I feel like that was more or less how it was worded upon promotion, because we knew with most of those guys, okay, they haven't figured everything out at the pitcher's level, but they're not going to figure out whatever they have left to fix in Charlotte anymore or in Birmingham anymore. So they've done that with pitchers, and maybe this can lead us into some Michael Kopech talk, but they don't seem to do that as much with position players. And maybe that has something to do with their lack of success with position players over the last, you know, dozen years or so. But I don't know if there's something to that where they have had such little success with position players. You know, they rushed Gordon Beckham up. That's always the one you talk about. They failed with Viciado, you know, recently, and you could go back and cite example after example. So is it just – could you make the argument that maybe it's just actually taking extreme, extreme caution, whereas they don't necessarily do that with pitchers?
They didn't do that with Tim Anderson. not that I think they needed to. And I guess you can argue he was coming up to try to get them into the playoffs in 2016. But,
yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, the other thing I would say is that, you know, which I think is a slightly better argument than he needs development time, is that they, right, one of the most precious things that you have as a team that isn't going to win anything this year is the playing time you can give out. And the White Sox have a glut of guys that when you look at them one way look quad A, and when you look at them another way look like they could be real contributors. And a lot of those guys play the outfield, first base, or DH. And so if you figure that, you know, Eloy is going to be up next year and they need to cut him, and they're going to need to cut a couple of these guys because it'll be the end of the year and that's when they're going to need to open space on 40-man or whatever else, that they want to squeeze as many at-bats as they can for Davidson and Palka and Nicky Delmonico and Adam Engel and all of that.
I'm just so now, I personally sick of don't, Adam Engel.
I was about to say, I personally don't find that super compelling. It seems like you could take, you know, I mean, if y'all remember the Patrick Starr meme, let's take all of Adam Engel's at bats and give them to Lurie Garcia, or like give Lurie all the playing time in center. And, you know, is Charlie Tilson still back on the DL?
No. Sorry, I haven't heard his name. No, Charlie Tilson got demoted instead of Adam Engel after right. when.
So let's send Engel down. Let's bring Tilson up because they need a second guy who can play center. And then let's, you know, but not actually give him a ton of run. And, you know, let Lurie play center functionally full time. And, you know, certainly I want to see more of Lurie hitting. And then, you know, I'm not, I understand that they don't, that there could be something with Delmonico. He looked great for part of last year. And there could be maybe something with Palka or Davidson. But it seems like you could trim the plate appearances those guys are getting and give them to LA.
Charlie Tilson had a 77 OPS plus and 121 plate appearances this year. Adam Engel has a 51 OPS plus and 638 career plate appearances. I'm sorry, I know we're talking about Eloy here, but you just re-pissed me off about Adam Engel's playing time. And I know Charlie Tilson's not the greatest option in the world, but the fact that he just keeps getting run out there and they optioned Tilson when I think it was Delmonico or whoever came off the DL just annoys me way more than any transaction like that should.
It would be a lot easier, I think, if they could conclude, because even with right, they need to keep one of Tilson and Engel on the roster because they need, I think,
an actual center fielder.
Right, they need a center, like you can't get away with, given who their corner outfielders are, you can't get away with having Lurie be your only center fielder, because I think after Tilson and after Tilson and Engel and Lurie, I think your best center fielder on the roster is either Moncada or Anderson.
Ryan Lemaire. So, Ryan Lemaire. I don't know if he can play center.
I mean, Cordell, in theory, if his back doesn't break again.
Is he? Oh, right. He's off the DL, isn't he?
Yeah, he's back up. He was in Birmingham and not in
Charlotte. But all of that is contributing to the idea that the White Sox have a bunch of guys where, because you have to keep one of Engel and Tilson on the roster, and those are the two easiest guys to write off, I think, yes. Because, you know, it would be great to give Palka and Delmonico another 100 plate appearances to see how they look before you go. And for that matter, it's good to give Avi that playing time because you might want to trade him in the offseason, and it's good if he can have a full season and then a hurt half season of playing well instead of just that one season that, you know, otherwise is just going to look even stranger than it already does. So I understand, like, that it does feel like the White Sox simultaneously have, like, nobody good, but nobody who's bad enough that, again, except for these center fielders, you need to keep on them around. So that's a little more frustrating, but again, I actually think that's a better argument than anything about Eloy needing seasoning.
Yeah. So,
right, which it's I almost want to say, like,
do you either want to cut all of those guys' plate appearances to give them to Elway, cut them all by 20-30%, whatever it is, or is there one that everybody with it, the front office can say, yeah, we're definitely just punting them?
Like they did with Jacob May. All right.
Yeah, or Jake Peter, or Willie Garcia, or any of the guys who've come through and said, you know, you can have a shot. And then some of them have truly fallen on their faces.
So I'm going to double back to something that was brought up towards the start of this, but with Beckham and Vicedo and the Sox failures to develop them as hitters. Well, it's also one of those where Beckham may have been rushed, but I think do you really think another half season of being in the minors would have helped him? Because it just kind of seems like
he hit well his first year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it just seemed like when he got to that level of, oh, shit, the league adjusted to me, he never was capable of adjusting back, and then it was just, all right, all downhill from there. And that strikes me more as just a failure of
a player
scouting or hitting coaches when you get to the point of, yep, you've got a guy, and that's baseball. No one ever doesn't have to adjust. And he just kind of got stuck with it. But then you get Vicedo, where they kept him in the minors a little longer than we were all hoping. Because I remember, what was that, summer of 2011, where we all just kept being like, why is he not up yet? Why is he not up yet? A similar feeling to right now. And with him, it was another thing where it was just failures to adjust. But with him, it's even more so, he's destroying Japan right now. He's doing great over there.
Hell yeah.
But I view him as less of a failure of development than all the other 29 teams. Once the White Sox cut bait with him, no one really tried. Like, I know he hung out in the minors for, what, Toronto for a little bit?
Oakland, maybe?
I want to say it was the Blue Jays took a chance on him.
I think the Blue Jays definitely did. And
then very, very quickly cut bait, and it's like, all right, the Blue Jays were the poster boys for salvaging failed prospects that could hit the crap out of it but really couldn't do anything else. You got Encarnacion, you got Batista. And if they even went, nope, there is nothing we can do with you, it was just like, okay, yeah, you just weren't going to hack it. And it's a thing where Cincinnati. Oh, no, not Cincinnati. That's just showing me Chunichi. Okay, my bad. But yes, he was with Oakland in 15. I think the Blue Jays invited him to spring training or something.
I was going
to
say, how the hell would it work?
Baseball reference photo is him. Baseball reference should do something where, like, they like to pick the most up-to-date photo, and the problem is sometimes, you know.
It doesn't make sense, yeah.
Right, it's like they should go back, and now that it's clear that Vicedo's, you know, not going to come back, they should just switch it back to the White Sox shot.
But, yeah.
Yeah,
he was. When you said Cincinnati, I was like, if a National League team took a chance on Vicedo, that would have been interesting.
Was Vicedo? Did he sign a major league contract? Was he subject to all the like service time stuff, or did he sign like a different kind of deal when he came out of Cuba?
I think he changed the
chicanery.
Okay. So he just got the big bonus, but he didn't. He was still subject to the service time rules.
I believe so.
Yeah, that sounds right. Because he was young enough. I don't remember how those rules worked, but it was something to do with how old you are when you sign out of Cuba or wherever. Okay, so I think we've properly griped about Eloy Jimenez not being in Chicago enough. We've done it for about 22 minutes, so, I mean, we can do it on Twitter more later, I promise. But we can talk about the other White Sox top prospect who's not in the majors for at least maybe a little bit more understandable reasons. I feel like if you would have said at the beginning of the year that it were August and Michael Kopech weren't in the majors, I would be a little concerned, and it's August 2nd and he's not in the majors, and I don't want to say I'm concerned. He's certainly been good, and he was certainly better in July. He seems to have shaken off his control issues. I mentioned our last podcast. Nick talked with BP prospect writer Jeff Paternostro, and he kind of went at length about kind of concerns that some scouts have had over Kopech's viability as a starter. Obviously, they also still acknowledge that he has ace-like potential. His last 6 minor league starts have more or less been good. Last time out, he struck out 8, walked 2, and I think those were back-to-back, and he just gave up 2 solo homers to freaking Pedro Alvarez. And
I mean, there's not really any shame there.
No. Pedro Alvarez is a guy who's had quite a bit of major league success, and I didn't even know was still within Oregon until he hit a homer off of Michael Kopech. But I feel like I don't know if they'll do it simultaneously. I don't know if his kind of mid-season struggles with control will be to the point where they hold him down until September or even until 2019. But that doesn't really frustrate me as much as Aloy just because of the struggles. I don't know what you guys think.
I mean, yeah, with him you can at least look at his control and, okay, we're trying to get him to refine these pitches because he's just been able to rely forever on blowing people away. With pitchers, it's easier to buy into, okay, they might need a little bit more seasoning. It is what it is. But I think he's probably about as ready as anyone to come up.
Well, he's almost as ready as anyone. I don't think he's as ready as Eloy is. you know, he has had... I would like to see him up in September. He has... You know, I can't claim I've been watching his starts down in Charlotte, but, you know, I haven't seen, you know, the either organizational or national prospect writers, you know, bang a drum for him the way that they do for some prospects. And, you know, the BP folks and the BA folks, I don't think have, you know, he hasn't taken it. He's held serve or maybe done a little bit worse is my gloss on all the writing I've seen. And given that there are a lot of questions, you know, he's not going to be able to answer all of them, but, you know, seeing him polish a little bit as he has been this month, I think would do a lot for people. And, you know, not to bang this too hard, because I know that you know, at a certain point you got to cut bait on these guys. But unless they want to go to a 6-man, it's hard to see who starts you're giving him at the moment. You know, there's unless you can find a waiver trade for James Shields, I don't know where, or go to a 6-man rotation. It's not obvious where you're bringing him up.
But I don't see.
Well, branching off of that, I do think you can probably find a waiver trade for James Shields fairly easily. You get him to a contender that's basically just trying to save arms until games actually matter again. And I don't think James Shields will necessarily bring back the biggest of returns, but at the way he's pitched this year, I don't think it's wholly unrealistic to see the Sox getting something like they got for Miguel Gonzalez last year, where it's like, okay, we're just trading you away basically as he's not going to be someone that makes your postseason roster, but he's going to be someone that soaks up innings until you make the playoffs at a rate that you can live with. Because, yeah, he's not James Shields of old, but he's also not the James Shields of like the past 2 years. Even he's something somewhat useful again.
Yeah. I mean, he's better. I think hasn't he been pitching better than Gonzalez was last year? I say having not looked at the numbers. They'd have to eat the money to move him, but
But the money's there. You might as well eat it.
I agree 100% with that. And so I think if they find a deal for him, then that would be a good time. That would, I think, be a natural way for them to call – natural time for them to call Kopech up. But as it stands, I don't – you know, they – every start is important for Reynaldo Lopez and for Giolito. And, you know, you always want – you know, and Rodon needs to get into a rhythm. And every start's important for Dylan Covey as well. And, you know, I know there's conversations about at what point do you start talking about moving Lopez or Giolito to the bullpen, but, you know, they haven't looked like Carson Fulmer, at least, so.
For Covey, I mean, I know he had a couple start stretch there where he was really good, but I don't know if I'm as excited about Dylan Covey as some other people are. Maybe, Hell, maybe his stuff plays up in the bullpen better than anyone's because he seems to have the a second time through the order curse. I don't know the numbers. That's just kind of what it seems like to me. And I mean, hell, why not go to a 6-man rotation if you want to get all those guys starts? You know, I think it was.
Yeah, I think, no, I mean, I think it was
you, Frank, who mentioned, you know, you maybe you don't want Giolito and Lopez throwing as many innings as they're projected to this year, you know, struggles or not, they're still young arms. But yeah, I mean, just in general with Kopech, I feel like even if it's just September at this point, you want him to get a little bit of exposure facing major league hitters. You saw that the White Sox kind of have started doing that quite a bit, and I don't think it's uncommon across the majors, where last year you saw, I think it was, you know, he went to Charlotte the last couple weeks of the season, and I think Hansen and Aloy went to Birmingham the last couple months of the season, and there's a couple other examples just because the org said, we want them to get a little bit of a taste of what they're going to see next year because that's where they're going to start the level. And I think you can even expand that to the major league level where you say, okay, maybe we're not calling up Kopech as early as a lot of people thought we would, but we still want him in the majors in September because we envision him breaking camp with the major league team next year.
Which I think is pretty realistic at this point because who's really going to block him? We've reached the point where the Carson Fulmer experience is now, okay, he's a reliever. And, yeah, you should still be giving rope to Lopez and Giolito, but, yeah, with Shields will be gone next year. So, really, there's one sure shot in the rotation, and that's Rodon. And
I mean, you're not thinking about the fact that they're probably going to go out and sign Clayton Kershaw and Dallas Keuchel in the offseason, too. So, they'll have that to compete with.
You're a silly man, Colin.
I was going to say, are you really not going to respond to that?
I had to figure out how I was going to. Also, the dog just hopped up and laid across me, so I was a little distracted by 80 pounds flying at me out of nowhere.
Maya?
Yep.
I was hesitant to say the name because I didn't want to get it wrong and call it your cat's name by mistake or something.
We're like an hour away from dinner time, so the three of them are starting to get antsy. Ah.
There are a couple, they should probably sign somebody, and you know, next year there's also how far away are Stevens and Adams?
I mean, Stevens could hypothetically be up in September too. I mean, what is he's like 25 at this point, isn't he? He's an older prospect.
He's not as young as the rest of them.
Jordan Stevens. Well, not Jordan Stevens, the apparently there's a musician named Jordan Stevens, too.
Let's get him out there, too.
Yeah, Jordan Stevens is actually going to be 26 in September, so.
Yeah, it's about time to shit or get off the pot there.
Yeah, he's, what's he been doing in Charlotte? Let's do some stat line scouting.
Let's not do some scat. No.
He has he's thrown 74 innings in Charlotte and has a nice 69 strikeout total, 5 homers, 25 walks, 4.36 ERA. I mean, what's he, a back-end starter ceiling? It's nothing to be excited about, but like I said, he's going to be 26. Why not see what you got out of him? Maybe make up an injury for Giolito to cut his innings down or something. I don't know. Well, someone started talking about trades with James Shields. I wrote earlier this week after the trade deadline passed and the White Sox didn't do much other than they sent some international money to the Yankees and to the Rays for guys whose names escape me. Caleb Frère.
Yep.
And Hunter Shriver, a couple of relief arms. Shriver is a little I feel like Frère, Nick wrote up Frère, and I think he's someone who you could project being in the bullpen like almost right away, especially on this team, whereas Shriver was a 7th round pick by the Rays last year. So he's a little bit farther away. He's in high A. But I wrote about the quiet deadline and the fact that that doesn't necessarily mean they're done making moves. Rick Hahn has shown a willingness to make August trades in the past. I think with the type of trade pieces they have on the roster currently, they fit well for potential August deals with Shields and Luis Avalon and Xavier Cedeño. You know, maybe even I think James wrote about someone like Leury Garcia. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. I mean, he's made at least one August deal every year of his tenure except for 2015. You know, Leury Garcia came over in a waiver deal in 2013 when they sent Alex Rios to the Rangers. Last year's Miguel Gonzalez deal, someone mentioned, they got back Tequan Forbes, who's at least semi-interesting infield prospect. So do you guys expect them to be doing anything this August in terms of trades?
I think Shields will go. It's the most fitting one that it opens up a spot for more of your young pitchers who you do need to call up come September. And he can actually bring back like a C-level guy that, yeah, whoever comes back probably won't really amount to much of a big deal, but just keep collecting those lottery tickets the way we have been.
Right. If you trade, as I think, you know, James at the Athletic wrote, if you trade James Shields and you get back, you know, Leury Garcia, even if it's, you know, someone whose path is as twisty and winding as you know, the previous Leury's has been, then that's a pretty good deal.
I mean, any lotto ticket you get for a guy like Shields has a better chance of being a contributor on the 2022 White Sox than James Shields does. So
it's a pretty fair assessment.
Right. And it's not damaging their ability to, it's not, you know, wrecking their roster. They don't right. They have a couple guys in Charlotte that they could call up and it wouldn't be a problem to take a start. And, you know, and they, I'm not super worried about them wearing the bullpen out. I mean, Ricky's propensity to use four relievers in an inning, notwithstanding, they have plenty of relievers. Most of them aren't terrible. If they absolutely have to, you know, they have a couple guys they can, you know, they can stretch out Tyler Danish again. But, you know, they have Stevens and Adams and Kopech. So, you know, I don't think it's going to be, it's not as though there's going to be one, they're not running a major risk of like a 25-4 loss. You know, just by virtue of running out of pitchers.
Yeah, I think I think I recall a conversation at the beginning of the season about James Shields, or maybe during the off season, and about how even if you could trade him at that point, do you really want to? Only because he saves so many of your young arms. Like, if you're not going to win anyway, he. You know, we've all heard the stories about his veteran leadership and his helping Lucas Giolito in Charlotte last year, and also just his presence in the clubhouse, but then also just his ability to take the ball every fifth day and throw however many innings, I think matters when you have so many young arms. But we are getting to the point in the season where that matters less and less. You know, all of these guys only have, what, five, six more starts left this season anyway, and so you can continue to throw them, Frank, like you said, call up Stevens, Kopech, whoever else, rest in peace Chris Volstead, and go from there. And I think, I mean, Hahn showed last year that if he is a relief arm and he's healthy, he can deal him. So Avalon and Cedeño, I feel like, would fit into that category pretty well. Nate Jones, unfortunately, is hurt like he always is. So that is not an option. And, you know, I gave Nick some shit for suggesting Leury in the Slack the other day because he's such an easy-to-root-for player. But like James at The Athletic wrote, you know, that's the type of player, you know, league average offense who can play every position on the field except for first base and catcher. There's contenders that could use that. So if you could get something for him, maybe you consider it.
Is there a particular reason to talk about Cedeño as opposed to the other guys in the bullpen?
Because Cedeño's been good, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's right. It's like slightly paradoxical, though, to say, like, this guy has been good, and we could still keep him around for a couple more years. Right, I understand that makes him more valuable, but also makes him more valuable to you. And so, you know, what are you getting for, you know, whatever you're going to get? It seems like the likely thing that you get back for Xavier Cedeño is someone that you hope in 3 years is as good as Xavier is, you know, someone where you'd be excited if they were as good, you know, at their major league peak as Cedeño's been this year.
Yeah, but Cedeño's also 31. I think that's probably part of the reason. Who else is in the bullpen that's like a quote unquote veteran other than him and Avalon? Did you just yawn? What was that?
Santiago.
Yeah, Santiago. Hasn't he been kind of trash? I'm guilty of not knowing the statistics of most of the White Sox relievers. I'll readily admit to that.
And you call yourself an editor?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jenmar Gomez. I mean, he's a veteran, I guess.
Their bullpen right now is Avalon, Fry, Santiago, Manaya, Cedeño,
Vieira, Danish,
Thiago Vera. That was 8 guys.
Yeah, I just brought the depth chart up. So I mean, you're keeping Fry around,
and their, you know, their most dominant reliever of the year, Matty D.
Yes, obviously.
Do you think there's anything to the discussion kicking around the White Sox internet as to whether it's worth giving him more run? That he is more valuable on the roster if he's the last man in the bullpen and your last hitter?
I'm not
really. It's fun. It's a really fun idea, but I just don't. It's been
a bright moment of entertainment in an otherwise horribly dark and dull season.
Yeah.
But
I'm sorry, Penals. I just am not really on board with that idea. I just don't think it's feasible.
I think if the second relief appearance had occurred in like there were one in April and one in May, then I might have been open to giving him, you know, pitching him once a month, you know, or once or twice, you know, 1 to 2 times a month, and the longer he goes without falling on his face, you know, then you think about it. But I don't see any point in starting it in earnest now.
It is kind of interesting how much Ohtani has changed that conversation just in general, where someone can throw out, hey, this position player threw 2 scoreless innings. Should we consider actually making him a pitcher/hitter? And everyone doesn't just laugh.
I think it's Christian Betancourt.
Yeah, Betancourt too, yeah. But Ohtani on a more national level, where, you know, every baseball fan who follows the game on a slightly above average basis knows who Ohtani is. I don't think as many people know who Christian Betancourt is.
But I'm just saying that, right, there's 2 guys that you talk about this with. There's, like, Hunter Green and Shohei Ohtani. And, right, Ohtani is saying, this dude was a stud at both of them in college. Why should we make him pick? And, you know, Christian Betancourt is, right, he's just the next level of Brooks Kieschnick. And people are saying, well, if you're going to have to, if everybody wants to have 9 relievers, then if one of those relievers can hit and play the field a little bit, then, you know, that makes more sense than it's more helpful now than it used to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's also one of those where I saw the argument where people were saying, well, all these players played both ways in high school. And it's like, well, yeah, but how long ago was high school? When you're talking about guys who were in their mid-20s.
Yeah, a lot farther ago for Matt Davidson than it was Hunter Green.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's one thing with Otani.
No, I'm not saying it's an obvious thing to do. I was just. I think it's a charming idea.
It's just a sentiment I saw a lot on Twitter. It was just like, well, all these guys grew up being like the best athlete on their team, so they pitched, and then on their off days they played these other positions. Like, yeah, and Paul Konerko used to play catcher. What the fuck does that matter?
Right. Gary Sheffield played third long
enough. You can't go back and just be like, oh yeah, I can regularly do this and expect no negative consequences.
You can't regularly do all the same things you did when you were 18.
I mean, I can try, but it's going to end very badly.
I think it'd be more fun if we saw this conversation happening where people just start picking random relievers and converting them. Unfortunately, I think people are too reasonable to want to do that, but
yeah. So, I mean, I guess going back to where we started this point, so they've got three guys in the bullpen who aren't going anywhere. Fry, Vieira, Danish. The other guys all can go potentially, but you're probably not going to get shit for them. I mean, they got freaking Casey Gillespie for Dan Jennings last year. Casey Gillespie, it turns out, sucks, but he at least was someone.
Right, when he looked cooked, it's because he was cooked.
Yeah.
There was a time where he was a thing.
I mean, he was a first-round pick like 3 years ago, wasn't it? But, and there's nothing.
I saw him in Staten Island. I think he was the first minor league player I'd ever seen where they had the shift on.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You see that all the time now.
I noticed they had the shift on, and then I looked him up because his last name was Gillespie. And
yeah. You see that all the time now. I go to Round Rock games, and they're shifting everyone. They're shifting, like, Pete Cosma down in AAA.
Yeah, that's also AAA, right? I mean, this was short. This is the Penn League. So.
Oh, yeah, that's more
younger. Because I live in the – the minor league teams I have access to don't actually have any prospects on them. It's very frustrating.
The minor league teams I have access to don't have any prospects on them either. It's Rangers AAA. I went to a Rangers Royals AAA base. You said you went to a Royals Rangers major league game. I went to a Royals Rangers AAA game. That's way worse.
Okay. Yeah, but at least they have the Omaha
Storm Chasers.
I was going to call them the X-Men groupies, but I guess it's the same thing.
I mean, I have to go watch the Mets AAA team play if I want to watch baseball. So
the Mets,
that's still right. I get the Mets, short season A team or the Yankees short season A team. Right? It's the short season that really kills it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you got AAA teams like Mark and I have. You see a guy come around every now and then who is interesting, or you get to see a. Rehab starts. Yu Darvish was in Round Rock last year making rehab starts.
I went to Desmond Jennings was regularly out here recently, and that was depressing.
Who?
Desmond Jennings?
Yeah.
The heir apparent for Carl Crawford?
2 years ago, or no, my first Carl summer Crawford's in Austin. What?
Carl Crawford's still getting paid?
Probably. Are you looking it up?
Yeah.
As one does.
I hope so.
I hope they're all getting paid. Everybody forever.
Same.
All right. It looks like 2017 was his last year under contract.
Ah, bummer.
He made $21,857,000 last year.
Okay. Go Carl.
No, my first year in Austin.
It was released. He was not in anybody's org last year.
That's depressing. How old is he?
36.
Old enough.
So he was released in June 2016 with, I guess, half of the $21.6 million on his contract left. And then, so.
Yeah, a lot of money
not to work, but, he earned it.
My first summer in Austin, I went to one Round Rock Express game and one Texas Rangers game, and I just so happened to run into a Kyle Loesch start both times. That was depressing. I'm pretty sure that the Rangers start I saw was in like August or September, and that may have been his last major league appearance. But you get to see guys come through every now and then who are, like, actually interesting prospects. Like, I got to watch Willie Calhoun for half of the season this year, and that was pretty cool. You've got Pete Alonso in Vegas, right, Mark?
Currently, yes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, last year was cool because I had Amed Rosario and Dominic Smith, and a lot of this year I had Smith, but then...
But Smith sucks now.
Yeah.
And yeah. He was replaced by Pete Alonso, who hit an 8,000-foot home run in the Futures game.
That's a lot of feet.
Yeah. I think it's a record.
Yeah. I've been meaning to get down to Trenton, but, you know, that is like an hour and a half on the train to go see a double-A game.
It always drove me nuts when growing up, and maybe someone has written about why this is actually the case, but it always drove me nuts that the White Sox, you know, for most of my life, maybe all of my life, never had a minor league team within reasonable driving distance of Chicago.
The reason they've done it is they want all of their teams as close together as possible to facilitate movement between rosters.
I mean, right. Yeah, that
but
makes
Baltimore
sense.
Wants that as well, and everybody's within driving distance of Baltimore.
Well, that and it's one thing where, like, that was more of a reasonable excuse back in the day, whereas it's really not that hard to just get a guy a flight.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's reason. I actually, that does seem like a worthwhile, because people know more about, right, there's... They pay attention to the minor leagues in a way that they didn't used to, I don't think. Yeah. It is funny if they drop Bristol and still have Great Falls, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's weird to me that not so much that the White Sox haven't snatched them up, but it's always been weird to me that the Joliet Slammers aren't an affiliated team with, like, anyone. They're in that weird rinky-dink... I don't even know what the league is called now because it changes names. I know it was the Frontier League,
right, Mark?
Frontier League, yeah.
Because Rockford had a team in the Frontier League forever too. The White Sox were affiliated forever growing up. I saw freaking, you know, a bunch of dudes with the Expos and they were my childhood. They were the Rockford Expos, Royals. Oh, it was Johnny Damon. Johnny Damon was played for the Rockford Royals. Expos, Royals, Reds, Cubbies, and then...
I understand that Joliet's not going to magically become a AAA team out of nowhere, but that always made, like, the world of sense to me if you could somehow make them a AAA team for the White Sox, because you could literally buy your player a $7 Metra ticket. They could leave the stadium in Joliet and get off at the stadium in Chicago without changing trains. She'd be like, yep, here's a one-hour train ticket for $7. Go for it, kid.
Also, you want to talk about fan base and making money, especially when the team's going through what it's going through now. You know, yeah. You'd fill up that stadium.
Oh, God, that way lies the Mets. Don't talk like that.
Wait, what?
So the Mets own their affiliates. They bought Binghamton. They've always owned Brooklyn. And
they just bought Rochester.
Right, and they Syracuse, I think.
Syracuse, yeah.
And so they're swapping Vegas out for Syracuse, and that's why they do things like sign Tim Tebow or like guys doing extra rehabs, right? I get emails from either the Mets or the Cyclones being like, go see Syndergaard, do a rehab start down in Brooklyn, or like I tried to go to a Cyclones game a couple years ago when it was after. So Reyes had been released, and they had him do a rehab start in Brooklyn, and they sold it out because baseball fans don't have any morals. And you know, and it's sold out, right? Like how they don't—I don't think they sell out a ton. And so, you know, they care, right? The Mets, the White Sox already have too much in common with the Mets, and you know, the Mets have very clearly made minor league decisions. Because they want to get the extra revenue and the extra bump from all these teams they own. It also turns you into the Braves, who at this point are just a real estate investment fund masquerading as a baseball team. Because they've gotten all of their minor league affiliates, I think, now play in publicly funded stadiums. Right? Like, surely Biloxi, that's the best use of the money.
I mean, our major league team kind of plays in one.
Oh, yes, but Atlanta then also pulled the most egregious.
Oh, yeah, the fact that they've had three different stadiums in my lifetime blows me away.
Anyhow, with respect to Joliet, it's obviously not a fair comparison, but Joliet has 50,000 more people than Round Rock does.
Yeah, Joliet's a great city.
How many people's Joliet got?
Joliet is number
30,000. Joliet has 150,000 and Round Rock has 120. Now, Round Rock is in Austin, and so obviously it's a real city, but
yeah, I mean Round Rock is
right. The Round Rock Express are functionally an Austin team, is my understanding.
Holy shit, Round Rock has 120,000 people. I live like across the street from Round Rock. I didn't know it was that big of a city. It doesn't seem like it.
I will not listen to any slander of Joliet as a city. It is a real city. It has 150,000 people in it. That is a real city.
Yeah, it's passed up Rockford, because Rockford has dumped like 100,000 people in the last decade. Like 20 years ago, Rockford, I think, was like the second or third most populous city in Illinois, and now it's down to like fifth or sixth.
It's number five right now.
Five.
Yeah. So, where's Naperville?
Naperville's number four. Joliet's number three.
Has Peoria passed up Rockford yet?
No, Peoria's seven. Peoria's dying very
quickly.
Fuck
yeah, suck it, Peoria.
Are Champaign and Urbana?
Champaign's number 10.
Okay.
Hey, some Illinois City population talk. This is quality podcast. You guys remember at the beginning?
Right? So we haven't gotten two and three.
No, you've got number three. Three's Joliet. I actually have these memorized.
Well, worldatlas.com says three is Rockford and four is Joliet.
There's no way. That's not 2016 census numbers.
Number two is
Well, how many people does it say Rockford has?
I think we can all agree that Aurora is not a real place.
How many Aurora is very much a real place. I worked there.
Okay, it's a western suburb, and it's named after the dawn. That alone disqualifies it.
I dated a girl named Aurora.
You dated a girl named everything.
What?
And they all worked for you.
I'm not going to be able to let my coworker listen to this podcast anymore.
This is going to be like a rehash of one of those ones where, like, Ethan started by acknowledging that half of what he said, James edited out to preserve Ethan's future employment prospects. That was probably a note to start rapping on.
Wait. No, Nick hopped in the podcast planning chat and demanded that we talk about Nick Madrigal, I think. He's gone.
I'm not quite sure if that's what he was trying to say. But.
I'm not sure either. He's gone. Nick Madrigal's gone like 700 plate appearances without striking out to start his career. He was
700.
Yeah, I think you can fact check that if you want. He got promoted today to High A Winston-Salem, which is cool because he's projected to be a fast mover through the system. Someone who could be in the majors as soon as, I guess, next year by the most aggressive of takes.
Eloy was in Winston-Salem last year. It can be done.
It can be done.
Yeah, but he's not.
Would you say he's going to dash through the system?
No, I wouldn't say that. And also, you're kicked off the podcast now.
That was really bad.
You're failing to intimidate me.
You're showing your warthogs.
Oh, boy.
Which was a much better name.
It's the end of the night.
So yeah, Madrigal's cool. We're gonna
Baron any future puns. Been a wonderful voyage.
So you remember at the very beginning of the podcast, or actually right before we started recording, when you said, "Hey, you should mention the BP ballpark events at the very beginning," and I said, "Okay, I'll do that." And then we got 56 minutes into the podcast, and I still haven't mentioned them.
So yeah. Editing is.
Yeah, so people should most definitely come to the BP ballpark event, Guaranteed Rate Field, August 11th. That's a week from this Saturday. There's a link to it at baseballperspectives.com. Your ticket gets you admittance to a private meet and greet with special guests from Baseball Perspectives personalities, including our very own Nick Schaefer, our formerly very own James Fegan, as well as BP's Harry, I've never actually said his last name, I just realized, Harry Pavlidis, Jonathan Judge, and Brett Sayer. Happens approximately 2 hours before game time. They're playing the Indians that afternoon. There's also a Q&A. There's also a Q&A session with members of the White Sox front office, including Rick Hahn. You can yell at him about the fact that he hasn't called up Eloy Jimenez. Actually, please don't do that. A ticket to the baseball game, obviously. a $15 coupon toward a new BP Premium or Super Premium subscription. And it's Jim Tomey bobblehead night, so you get a Jim Tomey bobblehead. Oh, it is a night game. I was thinking it was an afternoon game for some reason. 6:10 p.m. first pitch, so you'd want to get there early and do all this cool stuff. You meet Nick. You meet James. You won't meet Mark because he sucks. You won't meet me because I suck. You won't meet Frank because he sucks.
I'm going to be in the city. I just have not bought a ticket.
Get on it.
You don't need to friggin' email Brett. I don't think you'll need to buy one. But anyhow,
I just want to go on record saying I don't suck.
And Frank, you and Nick are going to be at one on the East Coast coming up, correct?
Yeah, this Saturday, which is probably the day after you listen to this, so you better hustle. There's a BP event at Citi Field with, I think, Emeritus. Let me look at the schedule, but I believe, there's a team panel featuring Emeritus GM Sandy Alderson, or whatever he is these days. There's a BP panel that may or may not feature me or Nick, but will almost definitely feature Crage and
probably Jeff and Jarrett,
Kate Feldman. Jeff and Jarrett are at Sabres.
Oh, that's right.
Which I will be missing this year, but is also a good baseball thing. So there's a lot of baseball internet in person happening in the next couple weeks. But and that one also has the Thor bobblehead, I think, for.
Nice.
So they've been doing a good job picking them.
Those BP events.
Last time I was at the BP Mets event, I got a Mets fedora, which is maybe the worst garment.
Wow.
That's
actually, sorry, I take that back. A Yankees fedora would be worse. That's unfair.
All right. You guys got anything else, or should we call it?
I think we can probably call it.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on, guys. And hopefully we can do it again soon.
That would be nice.
All right.